us, this is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Fisheries Pod. If you are the generous sort, you can be like Ben, Tyler, Janet, Robin, and John, who all support the podcast on Patreon. Through Patreon, you are able to support the show with either a recurring or one-time donation, which helps us pay for various parts of the show. If that isn't your thing, you can also purchase Fisheries Pod shirts, hoodies, stickers, and face masks on our Teespring store if you feel inclined. So check it out. As you might have figured out from the title, show description, or social media post, we don't have a guest today. It's just me, Nick, going solo, trying to build an episode by myself. This is usually one of our group episodes. The months where we have 5 weeks to get an episode out are always kind of tricky. We'd have to line up we'd basically have to have an extra episode in our back pocket or have a couple, two group episodes. And it's also difficult to get the whole gang together. We live in three different time zones and we all work full-time jobs, so it's pretty difficult to get us all together, especially with most of us having kids and having to basically wait until the kids go to bed so we can record podcasts. It's either pretty late Julie's time or right when Brett's getting off work, and so it's pretty difficult to find a time for all of us to get together. And honestly, with being the original host of the show, sometimes I don't get the email out in time to line everybody up. So maybe it's partially my fault. But I figured I'd still get an episode out and try to go it my own this week. And hopefully I don't stammer my way through it too much. I don't like doing the solo episodes. I've done a few in the past and in the earlier days of the podcast, and mostly read from a script, and probably sounded pretty boring. And I used to recommend people not listen to those episodes because they're pretty terrible. I remember I put one out, and I think it was the Halloween Scary Field Experiences episode. Had a few people send in scary experiences, and I had a script typed up for the episode, and you could tell that I was just reading from a script the whole time and read it the whole episode in one monotonous voice. And we were listening to it driving back to my parents in Iowa, and my wife turned to me halfway through the episode and said, "Honey, this is terrible. It sounds boring." And so it's hard to do the group episodes because you got to talk the whole time by yourself, and sometimes that's difficult unless you build a script, and then it's hard to not read off the script. But I've kind of been working on it, and we're going to give it a go today. So I've mentioned a few times in past podcasts that I try to set a goal for myself each year to read at least one book a month, and that usually turns more into read 12 books in a year. And I read a handful of books. I like the fiction series, The Longmire Mysteries. You might have watched the TV show on AMC and Netflix about Walt Longmire. The books are even better, so I recommend that. But this is the Fish Podcast, so we'll steer back towards the natural nonfiction. I've enjoyed books such as Urban Ecology, talking about ecological learning into urban environments, specifically Milwaukee. That was a great book, and I almost sent a copy of it to the mayor of Topeka because I thought that was such a great idea. I guess never pulled the trigger on ordering a copy for the mayor. I've also enjoyed Mark Spitzer books. He had one that I mentioned in a previous book episode, Beautifully Grotesque Fish of the American West. He also has some books about fishing for gar, seasons of gar, In Search of Monster Fish, and a couple of others that are great books about mostly about fishing, but he also mixes in some sciencey facts in there. Overrun is about invasive carp. And I also spent 3 years on the Mississippi River, so I enjoy reading about the Mississippi River. And this past January, I read Mark Twain's Life on the Mississippi. I've read other books. One of my favorites was Mississippi River Tragedies, and to a lesser extent, River We Have Wrought. Mississippi River Tragedies highlights kind of how the flooding is kind of made worse by some of the changes that landowners and communities along the rivers insist the Army Corps keeps up with, and how the floods aren't natural. It's a Mississippi River Tragedy is a History of Unnatural Disasters as the subtitle. And then River We Have Wrought, it kind of highlights the earlier changes to the upper Mississippi River, mostly above Keokuk, and how the Corps began changing the navigation channel or began maintaining the navigation channel, and they didn't want to get into flood control, and eventually they got talked into doing flood control, and back and forth between farmers using the river instead of using the railroad because they didn't want monopolized prices in Chicago. And pretty fascinating history. But this year, mention I read Life on the Mississippi earlier this year. I've also read Why Fish Don't Exist by Lulu Miller. That's a good one. Goes into the kind of a biography of David Starr Jordan, but also a half of a self-discovery book about the author, finding out some information about herself and her life. I read Shark Drunk, a book about a couple guys trying to catch a Greenland shark. It was kind of interesting book, a foreign book, the author's from Norway. So a little different style than what I was used to, but still interesting nonetheless. But most recently, I finished reading Silent Spring. A couple years ago, the Topeka Library, they have an annual book sale of books that are taken out of circulation. And we went and I happened to stumble across a hardcover copy of Rachel Carson's Silent Spring and scooped up for $2 because at that price, you can't beat that. And I didn't have a copy of it. So brought it home and it sat on a shelf for 2 years until I picked it up and just finished it a couple nights ago. And it's just crazy all the stuff that they did back in the day. Or at least the book makes it sound like it was crazy. As I was reading it, I mean, you picture crop dusters just flying around and dropping powdered pesticides all over the place. And I'd imagine it was a little bit more targeted, but it also makes it sound like it wasn't. And it was just covering the whole world in pesticides. And it's a little crazy of some of the stuff that was going on. But Silent Spring was published in 1962. For those of you who don't know what it is, I'd imagine most of the listeners do. It goes over, with repeated examples, how the overuse and widespread use of chemicals caused negative effects on all sorts of life. Basically, each of the chapters in the book highlights how these misuse of pesticides affected a different type of animal or a different ecosystem, from fish to humans to mammals, other insects, the whole gamut. They talk about everything. And the book had lots of support, but also lots of criticism. Rachel Carson was being treated for cancer around the time of the book release, so she didn't think that she would be able to stand up and defend the book against the predicted criticism. You don't write a book like this and not expect some criticism from the chemical companies. So before the book was released, they built a pretty big army of supporters to stand behind Rachel and the book, and also vetted the book. And I mean, you don't want to support something that you don't believe in, so they gave out, I mean, the book was almost released to a huge audience before the book was actually published. A lot of pre-release copies being handed out to scientists and legislators to gain their support. As the published date on September 1962 came closer, those chemical companies started with the bashing. I mean, they also likely had their hands on a few copies before the release date, and they were able to build up their criticism. And one biochemist said, went as far as saying that insects and diseases and vermin would once again inherit the earth if the readers of the book followed all of the advice that Miss Carson gave. And so that's pretty extreme. And I guess since they've banned most of the chemicals that Rachel Carson was talking about, so unless we're unknowingly being ruled by some insects or vermin, I don't think they re-inherited the earth, or as that biochemist claimed. So I think we're doing all right. Other criticism that I picked out from the many examples was Monsanto, a chemical company, published a parody of Silent Spring called The Desolate Year. Basically, a parody book that detailed a world of famine and disease as a result of the widespread banning of pesticides. I'd like to get a copy of that just to read it to see what it says. I'd imagine I'd laugh or scoff a few times as reading it through after reading Silent Spring and going through all the conservation coursework that I've done in my schoolwork. So as I mentioned, the book was released in 1962, and it took 10 years for the ban of DDT in the United States. And I'm not well versed in the legislative world to know if that's a fast amount of time or a slow amount of time. But I guess my first impression of it was what took so long after reading the book. You would think public support for it would be pretty strong for the banning of DDT, but I'd imagine if back then was anything like today, it was probably pretty split down the middle, and people took their sides and threw dirt clods at each other for a while, and 10 years went by before any action was actually taken. Some other criticism that came up after the banning of DDT was Rachel Carson and the book Silent Spring was blamed for nearly 60 to 80 million deaths due to malaria and people not being able to spray mosquitoes for malaria. that was kind of phony and just a talking point put out by probably one of the critics, very likely one of the critics, because DDT was not banned for anti-malarial use in the United States, and the 1972 ban didn't apply outside of the United States, so most of the countries affected by malaria could still spray DDT to control mosquitoes. DDT wasn't banned worldwide until 2001 at the Stockholm Convention, but it still allowed anti-malarial sprayings. So again, the Rachel Carson and Silent Spring shouldn't be blamed for any deaths caused by malaria because DDT could still be used. And on top of it all, most of the countries that had been spraying DDT abandoned it altogether in the 70s and 80s, not because of the book or anything, but because the mosquito became resistant to DDT. It wasn't affected by it anymore, which is ironic because the book talks about insects becoming more resistant as sprayings increased. So just kind of more evidence that supports the book's claims. And as time goes by, the book is revered and appears on many, many lists of top nonfiction books. And David Attenborough, the famous narrator and naturalist, claims that Silent Spring is the second most famous or the second most significant conservation work, followed by Charles Darwin's On Origin of Species. So that's a pretty big claim, or pretty big praise. As I was reading the book, and once I finished the book, a recurring thought that keeps popping in my head is, in regards to fish, is there a topic as big as this, or you'd have to go on a relative scale, but is there a topic in the fisheries world that would be as big as the widespread pesticide use? And could that issue be solved today with a book or the similar equivalent in today's world 60 years later? And then, I mean, in the climate we're in, the second thought that comes in my head is, especially in the United States, is it too politicized today for any change like that on this sort of front? I guess we'll find out with the Recovering America's Wildlife Act being resubmitted and on the voting block again. We'll see if it passes. It that might be something just as big as this, as far as what sort of changes that could bring to our field. But the topic that comes into my mind, that's kind of tied to all of it together, and you could draw a lot of similarities between this and Silent Spring, is changing perceptions on what has historically been called rough fish or trash fish. And along that vein, if somebody released a book today highlighting how we've been mistreating these fish over the past century, and if we stopped, then the entire aquatic ecosystem would actually be better, would that book be as popular today? I mean, I know freshwater fish aren't as popular as other aquatic life, and aquatic life in general might not get as much attention as pesticides being rained down on human beings and that sort of thing. But if there was a book released, would that change enough minds to make a big difference? And I guess nowadays, 60 years later, I'm not sure a book is 100% necessary. I mean, I would imagine that social media would be a much more effective tool today to change the minds of the public than by releasing a book, and probably less labor intensive as well. But you'd still need just as many facts. It just wouldn't be in the big, long, comprised written form. And there's already efforts underway. Some notable ones. I mean, the first one that comes to mind in this topic would be Dr. Solomon David. As a recent article called him the one man gar fan club. If you followed Solomon on any social media, you know that he is not a one man gar fan club, that he has built up a garmy. I'm sure he'd appreciate the pun, but he's built up a big following of people that they have grown to love the gar, or grown to appreciate the gar and respect the gar, based off of the outreach he's done on social media. I would not be surprised if at some point I'm talking to a member of the public here in Kansas and the topic of gar gets brought up, and I would not be surprised at all if they said, "Oh yeah, I saw such and such on Solomon David's social media. I fell in love with gar ever since." I would not be surprised if I had that interaction someday at all. The stuff he puts out on social media and the reach he has is quite amazing. And I also would not be surprised to learn if through some weird multi-person connection, Solomon David had some sort of connection to the state of Minnesota changing gar to a game fish this past year, a few months ago, whether it's through his outreach or if he had communications with somebody up there. That's just one example of what could happen with increased outreach for some of these species and the results that could come from that. And there's plenty of information out there. Salmon is a good example of what to look at, what to strive to be. And there's also other information out there for other species that could be interesting. There, a popular one in 2019 was Alec Lackman's paper about how old big mouth buffalo could get, being 112 years old. I mean, that's just amazing. Fish that are targeted in mass by bow fishermen could be centuries old, and those 100-year-old fish are just left to rot away in a few weeks in a ditch somewhere. So that's another big piece of information that can be used to kind of fight this battle. And another one was the Skarnecki and Schooley paper that we talked about episode 98 or so of this podcast, their big 50-page review of the history of bow fishing and where state managers need to be thinking about in the future for the management of this sport that's mostly unregulated and uncontrolled throughout most of the country. And there's a handful of other papers that offer up a wave of support for what's traditionally been called rough fish or trash fish. And there's definitely a change on the horizon. You can definitely sense a snowballing effect of all these different things going on. And bringing it back to me in Kansas, after I talked to Dennis and Jason last December, I had already been taking the role of the chair of our paddlefish and sturgeon committee here in Kansas. And we don't really do much with sturgeon here, and so it was mostly just a paddlefish committee, and we kind of talked about some statewide snagging regulations so you could snag non-sport fish, and so the door was kind of open. But after talking to them about bow fishing, I saw it as an opportunity and kind of as a calling to rebrand our Kansas paddlefish committee as the Kansas Alternative Fisheries Committee. And so it covers all of our alternative fishing methods and alternative fisheries, and so it will cover the regulation of bow fishing and snagging and spearing and gigging and all the species that are targeted by that. So it's mostly paddlefish and non-sport fishing in Kansas, and that covers everything from shovelnose sturgeon, American eel, bowfin, which are probably not found in Kansas anymore, but still listed as a non-sport fish, and all the familiar ones, the big mouth, small mouth buffalo, common carp, grass carp, bullheads, and that sort of thing. And so we rebranded the committee to kind of cover all of that and be a voice for those fisheries in Kansas. And I kind of saw it as a goal for a few years down the road to eventually change some of our regulations. In Kansas, non-sport fish are not protected by wanton waste, so people do not have to take their fish home and actually do something with it. They could just pile them on a boat ramp. So one of my on my short list of goals was to change that, and it was kind of expedited by a couple of emails earlier this year, and was asked to speak in front of one of our statewide coordination meetings about recategorizing some of these species towards game fish. And so talked to them, and I was pleasantly surprised that our upper levels of the fisheries division here in Kansas seemed to support the idea of moving a lot of our non-sport fish over to a game fish, or possibly abolishing the titles altogether. And so we were a little late on the ball to get that into effect for 2022, but we're fingers crossed if it goes through the commission, everything, we should once we have something put together, it should go through and be proposed for 2023 to go into effect. So I'm looking forward to that, and I'd imagine a lot of other states are going to be making some similar changes in the coming years as well. And so that's just kind of what's going on in Kansas. And but as I mentioned before, it definitely feels like the snowball is beginning to roll, and changes are definitely coming, and it's almost an exciting time to see what sort of changes and information is going to be coming out in the next few years as it relates to this topic. And speaking of changes, you might be noticing a few changes with the Fisheries Podcast in the coming future. I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that it's sometimes difficult to schedule this group episode that traditionally reserved for the fourth week of the month. We've sometimes filled that with some back pocket interviews we had stashed away for rainy days, or the occasional contribution by Sue. But It's becoming increasingly difficult to get everyone together for these episodes and some other circumstances. We ended up putting out a call for anybody interested in being a host for the show. And when I did this, the last time I did this, back before my daughter was born, I had a handful of people. And I think Brett and Julie and Sue all have helped out. There was a couple that never panned out. Just never took the leap. So I wasn't quite sure what to expect this time, sending out another call for people that wanted to be a host or people that wanted to help with the show. And I was pleasantly surprised. We had 8 different people respond to the show. And so far we've had a walkthrough kind of tutorials on how everything works with 6 of them. And nobody's been scared away. So we're gonna try rolling with a whole crew of hosts. And so starting later in June, towards the tail end of June, you're going to start hearing from some different voices. We have a great crew of people from all different backgrounds coming on to join the show, and they're going to take turns interviewing each other for their first episodes, and then before they're released into the wild to interview whoever they choose to. But with that many hosts, I mean, that's going to be 6 plus the 4 that are already apart. So that's a pretty big crew, and if they all stick around, we're very likely going to be moving to multiple episodes per week. And I'm not quite sure what that's going to look like yet. In my mind, it would be kind of boring if all of the episodes are the traditional interview style. So we might still keep our Sunday episodes as the traditional interview style, but and then mix in the some weekday episodes with a different format. And haven't solidified any of the formats, but some of the ones we kind of been feeling around are round tables. We sent out a question for round table topics on our Twitter page a while ago and received enough to do a couple years of those style of episodes, so that's something we might look into. We've discussed a journal club type episode before, where a couple different hosts read the same article and then review it or talk about it on the episode. And on a similar vein, a manuscript review rodeo. In my spare time, I kind of nerd out and listen to podcasts about podcasting, and one of the shows I listen to is called The Podcast Rodeo Show, where this person who's well known in the podcasting world does a podcast about podcasting and gives advice and pointers and that sort of thing. He does this podcast rodeo show where he'll review any show, and he'll just listen to your show and drop little nuggets of critique and see how long he can hang on, whether he enjoys the show or whether he wants to stop listening after a few minutes. And so we could do a manuscript review show kind of like that, where we people could send us their manuscripts before they submit them to a journal, and have a couple different hosts review them and talk about that with the author on the show. That's just an idea I had. Hadn't run by any other hosts, but thought it was an interesting concept. Another possible format that was suggested by one of our new hosts was he asked if we had any objection to doing shows more about the historical part of fisheries work, dealing more in the past and the history of it all. And I had no objection to that. I enjoy reading the old biennial reports of different state agencies and that sort of thing. So I find that stuff fascinating. I'm sure a few other people would as well. So those are kind of just a few of the ideas we had for different formats of shows. And something I played around with doing too is having live shows. We do most of our interviews and recordings with different guests over Zoom. And because of the length of some of our interviews, we do have the Pro account, and the Zoom Pro account allows you to simultaneously stream your Zoom show, your Zoom meeting, to Facebook. And so it's not something I've done yet, but something we might play around with if there's interest there in doing a few live interview type shows. I mean, most of our episodes, almost I guess all of our episodes to date, haven't been live, so being live on social media while interviewing a guest might add some extra pressure. I'm not sure if the other hosts would want to do that, but I'm sure some would be adventurous enough to give it a try. And of course, feel free to message us on social media or email us if you have a format or a type of show that you want to see. We're all ears on that front. Or if you have any. So that's all the episode I have for us. Ended up talking for a little bit longer than I thought I'd be able to. So I'm glad we're going to be able to put an episode out, and I hope you guys all enjoyed it. If you'd like to get a hold of me, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at FisheriesPod, or old-fashioned email, feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. You can download past, present, and future episodes on your favorite listening app, or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. And don't forget, you can help support the podcast with a monthly contribution through Patreon, or by rocking some awesome Fisheries Podcast logo shirts, hoodies, and stickers available on Teespring. I am Nick Kramer, and thank you for listening to the 122nd episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, read a book. Thank you.